Well, we appreciate the presence of everyone this afternoon. We appreciate the good meal that we enjoyed a little while ago. Wonderful food. Extremely good food. Dinner day, whether it's dinner day or not, we just always have such good cooks. We have wonderful meals and we appreciate that. I know some of you are tired and I know that light back there is out. But I can still see you. But I know you're tired, and I'm going to try not to go to sleep myself. I know if I go to sleep, there'll be no one to awake me. I'm going to try to stay awake. I did tell you about a professor of mine one time. Told us guys in school, it was in the winter time, and he was preaching this country church, and the heater right in front of the pulpit stand. And all that heat was just coming up into his face while he was preaching. And he caught himself dozing off during his own lesson. So that would be a shocking thing to experience. We come back this afternoon to our study of Abraham. We covered 4 points this morning. We were discussing why it was so great. We said he married such a wonderful woman. He was hospitable and generous, unselfish, even though he did not want to be taken advantage of himself. And thirdly, he was very obedient to God and all that God required of him. And he was willing, in the fourth place, to leave the familiar and go off into a strange land just because God said, I want you to do this, Abraham. You need to do this. And God's assignment for him required it. And he willingly did it. So we're trying to reach into his character and pull out these Bible traits so that we can imitate him or be like him as far as we possibly can. The fourth point, the one we start with this afternoon, is it comes from Genesis 20 and verse 11. He was smart enough to know you can't trust every man. Did I cover 4 points or five this morning? The light came on. Okay. I don't know where I am now in my outline. This is the fifth point, right? That's what I...
5 and 6.
Okay. Okay, number five. He knew he could not trust all men. This is why you had the situation you had that we'll talk about a little bit more later in chapter 20, in verse 11. But he said, I thought that the fear of God was not in this place. And by the way, that shows you also that he understood that there's a connection between somebody's fearing God and living right. That if somebody is not fearing God, he may try to take advantage of you on the earth. Man, that's insight. That's good. Because we've got so many people today in America who do not understand that. Well, that's why they come up with these books, Ethics Without God. They're trying to figure out how to have a decent morality in the country without including God in it. Abraham understood, if you don't fear God, you may try to take advantage of your fellow man. And that's why he did what he did in chapter 20. He's just like Jesus in that regard, John 2, verse 23 through 25. We're told there that Jesus did not trust himself unto men. He knew what was in all men. He wasn't naive about that. I don't want to be naive about people. I've said I'm not a very good judge of character, and I'm not. Some people are a lot better at that. I knew a man, a great preacher. Another preacher said to me one day, he doesn't know who his friends are. Or he didn't know who his friends are. We're not all competent or equally competent in the appraisal of human beings, whether they are trustworthy or not. And Abraham realized he couldn't trust everybody. He knew he could trust God. But men are a different deal. And so he was sometimes trying to have strategies that would protect him or secure him in the event that people acted on their lack of having the fear of God. Number six, he was courageous and willing to use all that he had to see that the right thing got done. Now this comes from Genesis chapter 14. You had a confederation of kings, 4 against 5, and the 5 included Sodom and Gomorrah. Lot's living over there at Sodom. And so you've got the four kings And one of these, Amraphel, king of Shinar, he's been imposing his will in the area. These other nations, these other little places are having to pay tribute. Well, they decide they're going to just throw this off. And so there's a fight. There's a war, the four kings against the five. And the five, including Sodom and Gomorrah, lost the battle. But then Lot and his family, and along with others, become captives of war. Amazingly. And we're told, of course, that verse 13, he's got a confederation himself. Abraham has his own confederation with a few other fellows. Mamre is one, the Amorite. And Aner, these two men, they also come up at the end of the chapter, verse 24. And Abraham has 318 soldiers himself. Do you have your own private army? Now, he's living in an area, no doubt, where they felt like they had to have, you know, like a border patrol or the frontier battalion, the precursor of the Texas Rangers. They had to have some sort of means of protection against criminals, thieves, brigands, things like that, people like that. So he's got these 318 soldiers. He's got a confederation with two other neighbors. And they decide, we'll go get the captives. And they do. They do. They get them, bring them back. And then as they come back, this is where he meets Melchizedek, king and priest of Salem, which will become later Jerusalem. Jerusalem. And a point of their meeting will be made, Hebrews chapter 7, in the New Testament. On that very meeting. But it grows out of this battle. And his return from this battle. And Melchizedek blesses him. And he gives Melchizedek tithes of all that he had. But then, the king of Sodom wants to give Abraham a lot of the spoils of the war. He's been victor. Here, you can have a lot of this stuff here. And Abraham refuses that. But our point just here, the first point is that he had courage to meet the demands of the situation, and he was willing to put his own things, his own stuff, his own army into play in order to see that justice was done. Now that's the kind of individual that he was. Now that last point comes to us, verses 23 and 24, which is this. This is the next point, point 7. Abraham was willing to give, but he wasn't always willing to receive. Now, you can't say that about all of us, but you could say it about Abraham. And he brings up a particular point here. He's trying to be very, very careful. I think he sees himself in a very unique situation, and he ought to. He doesn't lift himself up, you know, above his Confederate neighbors. He doesn't say, well, God made a covenant with me, and therefore I will have nothing to do with you. No, he's willing to be an equal partner in certain enterprises. On the other hand, he doesn't want anyone to get the idea that the blessings that are coming to him have any other source than God. And so when the king of Sodom says, here, you can have all these goods out here, and he says, no, 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 no. No, I'll not do that. Now, my confederates, they may need some stuff. And some soldiers that are with me, they may need some stuff. But you're not going to give me anything. I do not want it said that you made me rich. He was leaving that up to God. Whatever he was going to have, he knows he's under special covenant. God's going to be with him. God's going to bless him. God's going to take care of him. And maybe he knows already pretty much, you know, the situation at Sodom. We don't know what all he's heard already about the goings-on at Sodom and Gomorrah. Makes you wonder if that's why he raised that particular point. I want it clear in history. I want it clear to all men that my prosperity is up to God. I will not. He said, I already lifted up my voice. Verse 22. And Abraham said to the king of Sodom, I have lift up mine hand unto the Lord. I've already decided this. The Most High God, the possessor of heaven and earth, I will not take from a thread, even to a shoe latchet, and that I will not take anything that is thine, lest thou shouldest say, I have made Abraham rich. Well, the New Testament, Acts 20, verse 35, remember the words of the Lord Jesus that Himself said, it's more blessed to give than to receive. Abraham was willing to give, but at least on this occasion, he wasn't willing to receive. Number eight, he trusted God's knowledge when he knew he did not know himself. That is such a signal point. Hebrews 11, verse 8. We've already been over the passage this morning, but when he was called by faith, he went out not knowing whither he went. Several times in his life, he couldn't know what God was thinking. That's just like you. Now, you're not a part of a special scene like he was, perhaps, though you are a part of God's special providence. You're involved in God's providence of upholding the gospel in this world, keeping the gospel, the church, available to people who might be looking for the truth. And you can't always know everything you'd like to know. In fact, even a lot of it, or much of it. You simply go by what God has said and leave the results to God. And if you can't know, well, what should I do? Trust God, because He surely does. You'll be pondering situations all of your life. All of your life you'll be sitting down and thinking and wondering, why did that happen? I wonder about that. I wonder how far God's hand reaches into that scene or into that event. You learn to maybe measure your words or to monitor your feelings because you realize this thing may be of the Lord. And it helps you to stay balanced in life and not to go into extreme moods and situations because you're thinking like that. You're thinking like Abraham. I don't know what's going on here. I don't know the whys and the wherefores. But I know this. I'm in covenant relationship with God and He knows everything. So my trust means then I stand secure. I'm not at risk. Now he did what he had to do to protect himself, but he was never at risk. That's the deal. There are things that I'll have to do. There are decisions I'll have to make because God, in His providence, calls on us all to do that. But understand, people, Brother Conley would say, good people, understand, good people. People in covenant relationship with God, it matters not what comes or goes. In a sense, the bottom line is, you're not at risk. You're not at risk. I can trust God to know what I cannot possibly know myself. Which also means, number nine, that he was counting on God to protect what he couldn't. Can you protect yourself? Well, you might say, if I have a gun, I might. A huge person attack me, I wouldn't have much of a chance without a ball bat or a gun or something. I'd be at his disposal. I need an equalizer some sort. Abraham got into a situation and it wasn't of his own making. That's the thing. Genesis chapter 20. When he became a sojourner and a stranger on the earth going hither and thither, that wasn't his decision. That was God's. It wasn't like he was trying to make a fool of himself and create risk for himself and insecurities. God would have him go various places. And so, in his mind, you know, he made that arrangement with his wife because she was so pretty. We'll just say, you're my sister. That was his way of protecting himself because he knew that God would protect her. Now, that's the conclusion I've reached. You might say, well, why didn't he just, you know, tell the full story and allow God to protect him? Well, I don't know that I have all of the answers to all of the questions. But I'm thinking that he's thinking he will secure Sarah. And I don't know what all people are going to do out here where I've got to go and where I don't suspect the fear of God is. But that's a strategy that I can use in order to protect myself because God will secure her. He said He's going to give us a son. He's going to give us a son. He's going to keep her alive. See how rational that is? That's rational. He's probably trying to think it through as far as he can, as far as faith allows him to go. And so he says, we'll just say that you're my sister since you are. A half-sister's a sister. So that's what they do. So he's saying, I'm having to go into places and I cannot secure us. I cannot protect you. But God will. And you know also she was a willing partner. She didn't, every time he said that, no, I'm not. She went along with the agreement. She was in it too. So that was the way that they would secure. I can't. God can. So many times he's been abused. And as that old country song says, that last footprint's mine. I've done it too. I used to abuse him. Say, he just, he lied. He didn't lie. And you can say, he didn't have faith. He had faith. He had faith in God's promise to keep her safe. Because the promised son was coming one of these days. And it's not coming at this point if she dies. So he counted on God to protect what he could not. That's good for an individual Christian to know. Regarding himself or his family. You ought to take precaution. You may need to lock your doors at night. But I just wonder, you and I would be amazed if we knew how many people God has had pass us by who could have easily killed us. Now I'm convinced that that's the way that this works. You can do what you can. And maybe you need a ball bat or a gun or something if somebody breaks in. But how many people can you fend off while you're asleep? How many people has God in His providence made sure did not break in? It's like, in a way, when He secured the borders of Israel, when all of the men had to come to Jerusalem 3 times a year, and God says, you don't worry about things at home. Why isn't that principle still in effect? I know the power's still there. Somebody can say, I'm not going to Jerusalem. No, why is that? Because I went last year, lost my property, lost my family. I said, there's not going to be any of that. All the men at Jerusalem, 3 times a year, I'll take care of things at home. You think he's not doing that right now in Sheffield and other places where his people are? While you act like nobody ever's going to die or suffer. No, that's one of those things I count on God to take care of. I know that members of the church die, and sometimes violently, but I'm simply saying that's only going to be by God's allowance. And until He does allow that or want that to occur, it's not going to happen in my life. You trust God to protect what you can't. A bolt can only do so much. A pane of glass can only do so much. Not trying to get us to be silly about these things. I'm trying to help us to understand Abraham's greatness partially was in that point. God can do what I can't, and I know He will. And that's what the way we live our lives, according to the will of God. Number 10, he watched out for his children. Why was he so great? Genesis 18:19, God said, I know him, he'll command his children. That's why God picked him. One of the reasons, evidently, that God chose Abraham to be with the one with whom this ultimate covenant was made. I know him. He will command his children and his household after him. He's going to be a man of authority, responsibility, who will make demands of his children. He's not going to just let kids grow up as they want and choose. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of correction drives it far from him. He was a man of discipline. And God loved him for that. Genesis chapter 24, Genesis 25, 5 through 6. He still watched out for his children. Genesis 25 is where you have the scene where he passes away, he dies. But he made sure that most of his property went to his son Isaac, not to the other children. He watched out for the other children according to his generosity. But most of the estate went to the son of promise. Genesis 25, 5 and 6. And then number 11, he always knew God had sufficient reason for telling you to do anything. That's the way I'm supposed to live. God said to do what? He says to offer your son. The promised son, I waited 25 years for him. And now he's grown a little bit and I'm supposed to take him and offer him. And Hebrews chapter 11 says yes, but Abraham had that thought out in his mind. Well, it's an extreme act. It's an extreme act of violence. And my goodness, you've got to brace yourself. You think how you would feel to raise a knife to stick it into the body of your child? Think about it. How would you do that? You have to brace yourself for a thing like that. That's not normal behavior. It's not. God said, I want you to do that, Abraham. Take the life of that promised son. In Hebrews chapter 11, we're told by verse 17 through 19, he said, well, I'll do it. And then he's going to raise him back from the dead. Just like keeping Sarah alive, he'll have to raise this boy from the dead. So if he says, take his life, I'll take his life. And that's not easy, even if you have it figured out. You just think about it. Raising your knife to kill your own boy, your own girl. So, well, it'll be okay, because just in a little while he's going to raise you up. Yeah, but you've got to get through the moment and do this. And he raised his arm to do it. And God stopped him. He said, that's enough. That's enough. You talk about somebody devoted to the fact God has his reasons. Now we read about that. And Abraham becomes such a singular example of extreme obedience against even what would be considered normal activity and natural affection and human emotion. Why are you willing? How can you be willing to do that? Because God said to do it. And it is enough. And that is the way that I have to practice Christianity. I can't just go through life, trying to protect my emotions or some category of my personality. Well, now if it ever came to that, even though God said to do it, I'm not sure I could. Can't live like that. You want to be a person of faith, you want to go home to glory, if God says to do it. See, sometimes members of the church, they don't brace themselves to do what seems to be onerous at the moment, even in matters of fellowship in the church. When you have to withdraw from somebody that's clearly out of order and harming the church, harming himself. No, we can't do that. That's not love's way. What do you mean it's not? Brace yourself. Steel yourself. Paul told the Corinthians, first letter, last chapter, act like men. Act like men. But sometimes when it comes to duty, we think we've got the right to act like babies, and we don't. We do not. Abraham knew God always had his reasons. That means it's always reasonable to do what God says. And remember 2 Thessalonians 3 verses 1 and 2? Paul says, not everyone's reasonable. Not everybody has faith. Pray for me that I'll be delivered from the disobedient. Not everybody's reasonable. Not everybody has faith. Don't give up faith. If you give up faith, you're giving up reason. That's the way it works. There is no good reason to turn on faith. And there is no good reason in support of unbelief. It all works the other way. Well, there are a few more points here. I think I'll just stop right here. But anyway, Abraham's greatness is seen in all of these points and others as well. But he's figuring in the scheme of redemption, the wonderful story, because of the kind of character that he was. And one of these days, if God helps us to be faithful, and he surely will, and if we'll cooperate, and I hope we surely will, one of these days we can be able to be with Abraham in the land of the redeemed. Sit down in the kingdom, the heavenly kingdom, with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and the redeemed of all ages. May God help us to that end. If you're here this afternoon and not a Christian, come in faith, repent of your sins, and make the good confession, be baptized into Christ. If you've done that and gone astray, come home now. While together we stand, while we sing, won't you come?